Okay, welcome to our first video, part of our manifesto. And this video will be about one of the 7 parts that we discuss in the manifesto, being education. So what we do with the manifesto is we kind of point at how things used to be in the past, key areas of life, and how we think a future vision would fit and what can be changed to optimize that part of life. And in these videos, we'd like to share with you our experiences with school, with education in general, and how we think we should go about it in the future. So first off, how do we experience school? How is it for you?
Yeah, for me, it was, I look back on it mainly as a painful experience, an experience, a lot of time that I could have spent differently, or a lot of lost time that I could have been using to reach my full potential on an earlier age.
Okay, can you specify what you missed or what you wanted to see there?
Yeah, when I look back on my school experiences, it was usually in a very dull, poor ventilated space, mm-hmm. especially in my primary school. Mm-hmm. So when we sat for years in kind of temporary school buildings, mm-hmm. and usually the subjects that we had were quite outdated, mm-hmm. Not really preparing us for life in 2010, 2020 in the future. Mm-hmm. And it was really a one size fits all, education. Mm-hmm. So, and how much better would it have been if we first found out, okay, what kind of talents, character, skills do we individually have, mm-hmm. and how can we kind of map that to a future where we could stand in 10 or 20 years time, mm-hmm. and then what kind of experiences and knowledge can we add in the coming 10 to 20 years to get to our full fruition. And that's okay. what I missed. Most of the things that helped me to mm-hmm. become the person who I am right now, mm-hmm. did I obtain through extracurricular things.
Yeah, same.
So I had to kind of pull them in, but mainstream, most of my time, I was not engaged.
Yeah.
How was it for you?
I guess the same. Primary education, I don't recall much except for, boring and outdated environments. I remember that the focus was on sitting still, being obedient, which I can do. I'm not that bad at it, but it felt like we were always waiting on people who couldn't do it, who were just joking around, fooling around, always guys, to be honest. And then the teacher would have to kind of manage that person. We were all kind of waiting, and I don't recall just, actually being excited about learning. I do recall that we watched this thing called school TV, and I think it was once a week on Fridays that we watched it, and it was all on this, on news, on topics that were big and major at that point. And I think that one of the most interesting things that I learned or saw back then was the slavery period. That was super interesting to me, and I was intrigued, so I did a lot of projects on it. And
but it was probably because it was a project, it was not just...
Yeah. It wasn't school books, no, not at all. No, I did, I made posters, and I read up on it, and I made, pictures, and then I presented it at school. And same goes for Egypt and pyramids. I remember being super interested in that. But I also recall that because I was a bit quick and done with my work rather early, depending on what we did, but mostly, I was done, and then the teacher would say, okay, good for you, then you get extra work. Yeah. And that was then kind of like a reward, but it wasn't a reward because why don't I just go home or do something I really enjoy? So that was kind of weird. And last thing on primary education I would say is that we had sports classes. And I recall it was, for me, I recall it as that guys needed it to kind of let go of their energy, kind of rage. And they were all sweating and gross. And then the girls were just kind of standing on the side like, okay, I'm just going to sit here and chit-chat a little bit because I like my girlfriends better than sports. Yeah. That's what I recall of primary education.
Yeah. Yeah. And in terms of languages, you kind mm-hmm. of had a bilingual education.
Yeah, so at 11, 1 year before the end of primary education, we moved to the U.S. as a family. And yeah, so I actually learned English there. And then when I got back, I do recall that, of course, you have English class at school. But honestly, like, those classes were the most boring of all, I think. And the teacher wasn't even good at English. And all she did was just explain the grammar, nobody is interested in any language, not even in our own language. And the thing is that you need English all the time when you're a grown-up. I mean, when you're on vacation, to work, to having international friends, I cannot understand how we make such an important subject so boring. Yeah. That we all can, like, most of us, like, say, if you're not native, they say, oh, I'm really bad at English, so I can't do this interview, or, oh, I'm really bad at English, so I shouldn't do something like an international job, or just work with someone that speaks English all the time, because it will be very tiring.
Yeah. So in general, it's not really encouraged to become bilingual, even not for native English speakers.
No.
They usually don't take French or German, I think, very seriously. While it's so valuable to speak two or three languages fluently.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, it was English was not really important at school.
Mm-hmm.
Primary school, it was almost totally overlooked. So
it was a joke. We were just singing a Dutch English song.
I got my first real English classes when I was 13, 14 years old. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it was quite late, actually.
Mm-hmm.
And just like you mentioned, it was the English classes were mostly about literature, not about speaking it. And for me, it took till I was, I think, even 24, 25 when I started using English for work,
mm-hmm.
when I really started to catch up.
And I just recall another thing. They never spoke English in the English class. And then when you had to say something in English because it was like one of the assignments, you were ridiculed. It was like, oh, okay, how do I do this? Huh. Which made it a big thing in our heads to speak English. Huh. Yeah, it's
sad. So why didn't we have bilingual education, mm-hmm. 40, 60, or 50, 50% from,
also the other topics
the first class, actually, mm-hmm. from 6 years old, when our mm-hmm. our brains are still super malleable and plastic.
Yeah. Indeed. When I was babysitting a few years ago, I was teaching myself a bit of Spanish, and then I brought this like small little textbook with me just to practice it while I was babysitting, and one of the kids asked me, oh, what are you doing? So I taught her three rules on how to speak Spanish when you read it,
mm-hmm.
and I just gave her three pointers. And then I asked her to read it, and she could do it right away. And I was like, okay. And she was probably seven or something. But indeed, so true. If you learn it from an early age, there's no way that you can be held back by, speaking.
And where is school all about anyway? It's for me, mm-hmm. it felt like it was a preparation for getting a job. But we mm-hmm. didn't know actually what kind of studies we needed to pick or subjects that kind of directed us to our ideal career path,
mm-hmm.
and it was only jobs. It was not about entrepreneurship.
It wasn't even an option.
Yeah. So in the end, the goal was mainly to get a good job,
but without knowing how to, because there was no preparation. Yeah. So in the last year of high school, middle school, you get this test, right? And then mm-hmm. they say, oh, we think you should study something like that. And they give you advice. And for me, I did that test and it was standardized. And then the answer was I should be a hairdresser. And I remember being so frustrated because I was 17 and I was into blogging, writing, reading, presenting, and none of that came back in my school years. But then they told me become a hairdresser and I was so pissed. And then I studied communications, which kind of made sense.
Yeah.
But there was no guidance. And you like this a lot, or you've been interested in this, or I see you doing that very naturally. So we advise you to look at this kind of skill set. It was just literally go to schools to check out the open day.
So for me, I felt kind of lost and overlooked.
Mm-hmm.
And when I look at a potential a single person can have,
mm-hmm.
As a leader in the future, as an entrepreneur, mm-hmm. as a doctor, what kind of potential and are we kind of just giving away by not coaching someone from an early age? Okay, this is, I think, the talents that you have, mm-hmm. and why don't you nurture this, and perhaps you should follow this subject, or start with having some work experience already at 16 to kind of taste.
Maybe even earlier. But that also reminds me that at school you also you have to have the same subjects, everybody has to be standardized and do the same stuff, but we only put the attention on the things we cannot do so well. So very stereotypical is math, of course. I was super bad at it, but it's not like I wasn't trying. I was trying very hard. But I mean, why do we need to try hard at something we cannot do or don't feel like? Because that's not what you're going to do in life. You're not going to study that. You're not going to use it that much anyway. And I just feel like we have to like raise our bar on things we don't like to be on the average. But nobody looks at, oh, you do that very naturally. Let's just focus on your talents. And
so that becomes kind of your major. So when everybody could find kind of their major, the thing that they probably will be doing
when they're adults. The direction.
And then kind of on a layer of foundational skills and subjects that actually prepare you for life, like how to eat healthily, how to cook.
Take care of your body in general.
And relationships.
And just in general, did we mention financial education? I mean, we did get math. We did get, I tried accounting for a year in high school. Mm-hmm. Again, failed. But oh my God, where is personal finance?
Yeah.
We cannot manage our money. We have no idea. As students, we kind of like blurge money. And then to find out our debt gets worse.
It's totally neglected. Well, in the end, a school is about finding a job that pays your bills and that provides money. Why don't you learn about money and how it works and how it can work for
not
you?
Not the economy. I mean, of course, we learn the macro stuff, but it's about you and your finance and managing and investing and negotiating. People never learned it. And that's what we also want to, I think, point out is that we never learn to be professional and get to a job or a profession. So it could be also entrepreneurship, of course. But then we do need to go out there at age, let's say 25, to do negotiations, look at what fits us best, do job interviews. And we all think that it should be about the employer choosing us instead of two-way street, you know, do we fit, do we match? Yeah. It's insane how we look at things because we never learned it.
It's an illusion that there is kind of a divide between school learning from age 5 till 20 or 25.
Mm-hmm.
And then there is a kind of a sudden
hard stop,
where you need to start working, when you're totally not prepared for work life you don't know what it is to work, so you don't know
And what kind of skill set you need or how to talk to people professionally. And I mean, in my case, and I guess for you as well, I did some internships and boarders committees, all that stuff during my university years. That taught me so much. I learned from my extracurricular things, like you said, not from my studies, not from school.
No one advised them.
No, but it's not like, so you actually need to get a coach or a mentor at some point, and maybe at age 12, saying, you know, you have to make some very, very hard decisions, and they'll be very concrete, meaning that if you choose one of these two, you cannot really go back. So know what you're choosing. These are the options. There's no guidance. And a lot of parents, either they tell you what to do, so they're very pushy and almost like the soccer mom, or
you should do this,
right? Or we did this, so it would be logical for you to do it. Or they don't guide you at all. In my case, they said they were super supportive, but they didn't say we would think that this fits you. I had to do it on my own, and I think it was because they didn't want to force me into anything. But that's why I thought, oh my God, there's 200 types of studies. I have no idea how to kind of filter. I was constantly filtering just to kind of like look at that looks interesting, you know, on the website, the branding of the university. That was all I looked at.
I think that's the wrong sequence.
Mm-hmm.
It should start with knowing yourself when you're 12, 13, 14 already good enough by asking yourself questions, or letting a coach ask you questions to kind of dig deeper in where you're good at, what you like, what you find important. Also, so in the end, you can make those decisions for yourself. No one has to tell you, I think this is
no,
what you should do.
That's external motivation anyway.
No, because when you know in what kind of field or scope of or direction you should look, then you can quite easily just pick studies or work experience. You can
And still you can make mistakes, but you know, you learn from mistakes, but you can still go in a certain direction. And also about that, not only asking you questions about what you like and all that stuff, but also giving you experiences along the way, then having you reflect on it and say, for instance, presenting is something that we have to do all throughout our lives, from high school to our death, basically. And then we don't learn it, and then everybody gets super nervous and they have blackouts in front of classrooms of 20
especially
people.
Especially in the Netherlands, I think in the US, people do it more often, but in the Netherlands it's totally overlooked.
No. Yeah, but then if you do it so much and you feel so bad about it, then how can you not self-reflect and say, you know, maybe with a coach or mentor, hey, I feel that I'm not good at this, or it's a mental thing, but you know, just looking at a student as an individual rather as a group, you know, it's like
we're not looking at a person's potential and what is possible and try to do the most engaging subjects, projects that actually brings out everything that you have inside you.
Yeah, and then also, you know, role models. So if we look at teachers, to be very blunt, I think most teachers are not experts in their field.
They're not,
and I'm talking from high school,
sometimes,
you know?
Not even practitioners.
No, they're not practitioners. I mean, a French teacher is just a Dutch person, in our case, speaking French at a sort of high level, and he or she just teaches grammar. But come on, like, if you want to immerse and just learn a language, then speak that language in the classroom, you know? Like, have people be challenged. And because we don't have really like role models at school, I couldn't say, you know, that teacher, oh my God, she is good at that. So I think that I'm a bit like her and I like her too. Let me ask her what she studied so I can find out for myself. You know, something like that. But I wasn't inspired by any teacher at all. Man. Yeah. So anyway, that was our rage on the past.
Yeah.
Or anything else, Dan?
Yeah, for me it was... it was a total lack of digital skills, digital classes. Mm-hmm. I remember that we had kind of an 80s, 90s style IT class, which was totally outdated.
Yeah. And what did you learn there anyway?
Yeah, I went to quite a prestigious grammar school, but also very old-fashioned, teaching us Latin and old Greek and old Greek and Roman stories and sages. Yeah, it was not preparing me for the future.
Or for greatness.
Yeah.
Wow.
And going to university, standing on your own feet, how was that for you?
So after like a long journey of looking for which kind of studies I really wanted to go, in the first weeks, I already felt this is not for me. This is not my kind of people. They're too slow. This is too theoretical. Mm-hmm. So I decided to stay in the course because I didn't feel like switching and there's no better alternative. I just took on extra courses. I worked a lot of side jobs, learning more than ever. Yeah. I did internships that were voluntarily, so not getting paid in my summer time. And I did some online courses on journalism and starting your own copywriting business at age 19 or even 18, just because I was so bored of my mind and I had some sort of idea on journalism. So I thought, let me just go into that direction.
You created your own curriculum, kind of.
100%. I think I spent 75% of my student years on extracurricular activities,
work
mostly, my own business, but also board years, committees, coaching, experts, learning them Dutch, all that stuff. And only to find out that, again, entrepreneurship was a minor you could choose, but it didn't raise me to be an entrepreneur. I did that myself by just surrounding myself with people who were entrepreneurial.
So is it too hard to say that you actually kind of saved yourself and created created curriculum yourself next to?
No, that's completely true. I gave up on the system right when I started, But I decided to finish because I thought, if this is my level and I am eligible and I can pay for this, then why not finish? Oh. But the whole point is that I could have done way more with my time if I didn't study and I just did whatever I did. And if I would have kids at this point, you know, in 2020 or later, oh man, I have good ideas for education.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I also would do that totally differently.
Yeah. Yeah. And for you?
Yeah, for me, it was, I was totally disengaged at secondary school. Oh. Tried to skip as many classes as possible, do as little work as possible to just still get kind of a B or an 8 in Dutch school system.
Mm-hmm.
And just doing, still kind of passing the test, getting by and going to the next year. And then in at university, I totally kind of crashed. Before I went to university, I didn't know what to study.
Mm-hmm.
So I picked kind of two very regular studies, which I could combine, economics and law.
Mm-hmm.
And then when I started and I started living on my own,
mm-hmm.
I was totally distracted by everything in student life.
Mm-hmm.
And I still had my kind of work ethics from secondary school, mm-hmm. that was almost doing nothing, not taking school too seriously. So
that's how you went about it.
That didn't work out in university. And actually, in my third year, I started to get a grip back on
how to learn,
how to
insane,
how to get grades, how to pass tests.
Insane.
And in the end, I in my fourth year, I did a board year, full time board year, where I did everything. I didn't study at all.
Mm-hmm. And what did you do?
I brought in funds for the student association.
Mm-hmm.
Selling sponsorships, organizing conferences, recruitment weeks.
So pretty commercial business development, sales.
It felt like running a business with seven other students.
Yeah.
With quite a serious turnover,
mm-hmm.
and I really thrived there. I had no ceiling. Mm. I could just start.
And it was creative because you probably you came up with the plan and all that stuff.
It was a big project, totally outside the box. There was no box.
No. Cool. That's how you discovered what you liked, or?
Yeah, that was my truly eye-opening, and when I finally got a grip back on how to study, and I deployed a lot of effort and hours into my studies. In the end, did two masters in law.
Oh my God! Yeah.
But when I finished, I directly had a personal crisis because I totally didn't know what I wanted to do. Because I knew, going into the law profession was not going to work for me, for my personality, for my...
How did you know that?
I found out during internships, actually.
In
am
law.
I very happy, that I did. Those internships were not obligatory,
mm-hmm.
or advised even, but I did two internships.
Yep.
And they showed me that I really, really didn't want to go into law as a profession.
Mm-hmm.
And then I had... kind of 7 years of extracurricular activities, very good grades, two master degrees.
So you were like a textbook student, and it was like you should really do law, right? It made no sense for you to actually kind of doubt it.
No, and then I knew this was not going to make me happy. Yeah. So I needed to go back to the drawing board.
At age 25, right?
Yeah.
24, 25.
24, 25. Yeah. Yeah, and I had to do some serious kind of introspection, which I should have done 10 years earlier, perhaps even more.
Mm-hmm.
So I didn't need to course correct 10 years down the line.
And in the end, your first job was in sales and development, right?
Yeah, in a software business.
Yeah.
And that gave me kind of a practical MBA,
mm-hmm.
which I never had.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah.
So if we would wrap this up and look at the future, how will we go about education if we had the chance to draw it from a clean sheet?
Yeah, for me, education is something that you want to have or need to have and need to have for life.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not something you do for a certain part of your life, then mm-hmm. you graduate and you never really have to learn again.
Mm-hmm.
But it's something that is there from when you're very young till the end of your life.
So lifelong learning.
Yeah, lifelong learning. And in the beginning, you have kind of more foundational classes and more knowledge input,
yeah.
So to say.
Yeah.
And more you have, you get more practical experience.
Yeah.
Even when you're 8 or 10 years, 10 years old, you get more and more practical experience.
So the balance shifts towards practicalities. Yeah.
Yeah. And especially when you're 20, 25, yeah, the shifts really kind of falls over to the outputs part.
So yeah.
Actually doing work that fulfills you, that is really part of who you are.
Relevant. Who you are. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, and so kind of work would start way earlier,
mm-hmm.
but it wouldn't feel like work. It would feel like just a practice,
yeah.
Interactive, real world things.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like
yeah.
Student businesses, growing your own food, going to office, company mm-hmm. offices to just see what's happening there.
Yeah.
Indeed.
Yeah. I would agree. And then how we started this conversation is like the dull, outdated, gross buildings of school, both in my case, primary, secondary education, even the university buildings. Oh my gosh, so gross. I would say host school at no solid location, have it online most of the time. And when it's knowledge based and you have to send information basically as a teacher, then do that online, have me watch it while, you know, whatever I do. But then when we're physically educating, I would say, indeed, like go to meeting rooms, see how companies work, listen in on conversations.
Yeah. Follow biology in an hospital or
yeah. and
in
then
a lab.
Exactly. And then also find out about nature in nature. So stuff like that. And learn presenting, learn communication skills, learn how to collaborate, learn how to self-reflect, and also learn who you are by kind of like making a passion project throughout your, maybe like from 10 to 15 or maybe mm-hmm. earlier, trying out different topics and seeing what interests you, and then have like mentors around you that fit that subject so you can actually kind of experiment, I would say.
Yeah.
And school should be bilingual, or, you know, depends on which country you live in, but English should be your second or first language at school. So it means not just learning English in the class of English class, but learning education in that language.
Yeah.
Go abroad, have different experiences with different cultures, different people, have exchanges. Make it interactive, different, varied, and fun to learn, because I think that's the hook we want to make to our next topic on the manifesto. Learning isn't fun. The connotation with learning isn't fun.
But it should be.
It should be, because it is.
Yeah. And people will probably say, this isn't, this will cost too much money, and this is going to be so
unrealistic,
bureaucratic, government won't approve.
You know what? There's kids that are homeschooled. I have no experience with it or know people that do it, but I can imagine if you're homeschooled, you have some sort of curricula you have to kind of fit into. But apart from that, man, I would know.
Yeah.
Or, you know, private schools. I think they also have better curriculum.
Yeah, I know that people will say, okay, this kind of education will be extremely expensive
mm-hmm.
and very hard to organize.
Yeah.
Because it's no longer an a school in a certain building with a small group of teachers.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to require many extra coaches, And a lot of organizations, actually all organizations, mm-hmm. are going to be part of mm-hmm. of the education of our youngest generation. So yeah. museums, police, hospitals, all kinds of organizations.
Yeah.
And then I say, okay, yes, it's going to be extremely expensive.
Yeah.
And we need to organize things totally differently.
Yeah.
But what we will get back from it is so
priceless.
So much more priceless.
Yep.
Because we kind of empower an entire generation to be so much more, to actually yeah. know themselves, yeah. know society, know which role they can fulfill, know what they can add.
Yeah.
And they will have so much more skills and self-esteem and
yeah.
power
yeah.
that everything kind of, it will come back in tenfold.
Yeah, and I also believe that, like you said, like you had a personal crisis at age 24, 25, and you studied, if we're honest, the wrong thing. But if we would learn who we are, what we are interested in, but also personal values, boundaries, you know, just self-reflecting on the failures, the experience that we have with others or with ourselves, we would actually be able to understand ourselves better and also not make totally random choices, because that's we haven't said it that literally, but totally random choices based on accident or, you know, incident. I would say that there shouldn't be a need for taking a world trip to find yourself, as we call it, if you would know who you are. And honestly, if you know your direction in life, you have a solid background and foundation, but also you have some sort of idea who you are and where you want to go, man, you'd be way happier.
Yeah, so it's not only better for our society as a whole,
yeah,
macro, mm-hmm. but also micro. This will create so much more personal happiness and fulfillment.
Indeed. And let's not forget that when you know who you are and you know what you can do, what you like to do, what you're good at, what you're natural in, you also know how to add that value to whatever it might be, what kind of job you do, or what kind of volunteering projects you have. So I think that if you know what you can contribute as a person, you are able, way better able, to contribute to others and to missions.
Yeah.
So amen. I think that's super. Yeah, amen.
Amen. Yeah. Yeah. So yeah, this is at the end of our personal experience with this topic, education. Please, if you have comments, reactions, if you support the things that we say in this part, our first part of our manifesto, just feel free to reach out.
We're super interested in hearing your experiences. I think a lot of people will actually say, we're so glad you said this, but there will also be some, you know, some people that are maybe a bit offended. So I'm glad to kind of open up a discussion, and we're super interested in hearing your feedback, your pros and cons. And also, because this is part of a manifesto, but we want to get in touch with people that are shaping the future of education. We're not an education platform, to be clear, but we want to talk to people that, you know, have been there, also acknowledge what we say, and are actually shaping the future of education. We'd be really happy to talk to you. So if you see it or you can pass it on to the right person, please do so.
Yeah. So next up in our manifesto sequence is going to be personal development, very close to education,
mm-hmm.
But also other topics of life will follow, like physical health, work,
mindset, relations.
Yeah. So
we always forget one.
Education, personal finance.
I already said finance. Okay, I think we got them all. Too bad. So thank you for listening, watching, or maybe even both. Let us know what you think on education, and stay tuned for our next 6 upcoming key areas of life of our manifesto. You can see the text, the actual manifesto text, on our website. Link will be below. And otherwise, you can listen to us on the podcast or view our videos on this topic. Thank you for listening and
bye
watching.
Bye.
Bye. Thank you for listening. This was number one of the 7 manifesto episodes, all of them critically reflecting on how society handled key life area aspects before the crisis, including our personal experiences with them and a vision going forward. Do you want to stay in the loop about the upcoming episodes and also the full version of the manifesto itself? Go sign up on www.growtribute.com.